Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Hi, welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, and thanks for joining me in the podcasting shed. Missed Apex is powered by SpannersReady.com. Hire us to produce your podcast at SpannersReady.com/hire us. I'm joined here in this little shed by Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going, Matt?
It's going most excellently, Spanners. How about yourself?
Do you know what? I'm fine. This week, though, has just creeped up on me because we had the back-to-back Grand Prix. It felt like the whole world was about F1. But this week, it's just kind of a bit, it's crept up on me.
Yeah, no, it's sort of, you do have that experience of just like, whew, let's take a breath. And then you're like, oh, but there's a show.
For those of you finding us now, we are an independent podcast hosted on SpannersReady.com, where we aim to bring you your race reviews before your Monday commute. Although I think we will definitely fail that next week, but generally, we want to be the first race review that lands on your podcatcher. We aim to bring you a podcast that is safe for work. We're going to keep it clean here so that you can play it at work or with kids in the background. My aim is that my six-year-old can sit next to me and hear this. So that's some of the housekeeping out of the way. We have more guests than I expected this week, Matt.
Yes, and that is a very good thing. Would you like to introduce them?
The first one from motorsport.com, the assistant technical editor. It's Matt Summers, F1 Summerfield. Hi, Matt.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Our next guest is Vortex Mortio. Your striking Californian looks are unique, if nothing else.
Well, I suppose unique is a good thing. I'll just take that as a compliment. Thank you.
Okay, let's go straight into
Big Dirty News.
Big Dirty News, Matt. It seems like the last few weeks we haven't had a chance to just talk about anything in the press because it's been race. Lewis taking somebody out on a straight, Rosberg being punted off on a corner. We haven't actually talked about F1 news for a while.
No, we've not. And there's been rather a backlog of hopelessly speculative stories to pontificate endlessly about.
Yeah, and there's been people telling me to talk about the effect that Brexit is going to have on F1. And I can tell you now that we're not going to explore those things because, contrary to what everyone believes, the referendum wasn't the button that pushes Article 57 on the Lisbon Treaty. There is a long, long way to go. So at the moment, there is no story about Brexit affecting F1.
So I can take it you didn't read my show notes then.
Okay, tell me what you want to say.
Well, regardless of what actually happens with Article 50, one thing that is a fact and not speculation is the remarkable drop of your currency relative to dollars and euros.
Yeah, and that's a pain for anyone wanting to leave the country, which is every F1 team every week.
But fascinatingly enough, it actually might be a bit of a boon for most of the Formula One community, because FOM vendor contracts are all specified in dollars and euros, but almost all of their personnel are specified in pounds sterling, meaning they could reap as much as a 10% extra profit on the drop in the pound sterling. And of the 11 teams, 8 of them located in the UK find themselves similarly situated in that most of their vendor contracts are not necessarily in pounds, but in either euros or dollars, meaning that their personnel costs will drop while their vendor prices won't change at all.
Yep. And people are under the illusion, I think, that this is a very temporary situation and that the currency will go back to how it was a couple of weeks ago. I don't think that's going to happen for a while.
Well, regardless of whether or not it goes back, I can offer a little real-world window into that, because my wife's day job occasionally involves buying things from your country.
Okay.
And she's properly put in to spend a very large amount of money, because essentially this offers a 10% discount to us over here in America land.
And some people on Twitter were turning the knife in, suggesting that now was the best time to buy Silverstone tickets at a 10% discount for all American F1 fans.
Woohoo.
Too soon, guys. Too soon. Okay, so the first bit of news we have is silly season. And we're getting to that point now. But if it kind of feels like silly season started from race one, where are we starting in particular? The man of the moment, Sergio Perez, being touted to go to Ferrari.
Yeah, he had some very conveniently timed podiums, I would say, relative to the endless speculation about Kimi Raikkonen's supposed underperformance.
It's not supposed, is it? It's appalling. He doesn't seem to turn up. I fail to believe that Vettel is. I know he's good. You don't win 4 championships by accident, all the rest of it. But with apologies to Vivian Bove, Kimi's been nowhere this race, and this season, he has been consistently nowhere race after race.
To which I would put to you, and what do you suppose Sergio Perez would do when Ferrari told him to get out of Vettel's way in Baku?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, though, because Sergio Perez, it depends on the way Ferrari do things, doesn't it, Ken? Because our good friend Carlo Carluccio, the F1 historian, was saying to me, oh, he's really annoyed with what Schumacher's done to Ferrari's reputation. He's going, you youngsters, you youngins now, you feel like Ferrari have always got a preferred number one policy, when that's not what Ferrari's about. But I'm sorry, as long as I've been an F1 fan, really, as a 35-year-old, they've always had a number one driver. So I imagine Sergio Perez would have done what he's told, or he'd have lasted a scant one season.
Yeah, hard to say what Sergio would do, if he takes that order or not. But on the other hand, I certainly agree with you, and I have to disagree with our friend Carlo, because Niki Lauda has written some good books a few years ago, and he made clear that there was, when he was at Ferrari, a number one and a number two. And when he got himself all burnt to a crisp, that was one of the things that he did, was come back and quickly reestablish himself as number one so he could get the team to focus the car around him.
Okay, but for everything else that Carlo writes on my website, www.spannersready.com, he's completely right, and you can trust him as a source. I'm torn between wanting to win this particular argument and promote the site. Okay, so is there a space going to be free at Ferrari next season? Are we sure Kimi's out the door? Because I am.
I don't think it's a coincidence that the Mexican sponsors have been big at Ferrari, and that the Sergio's countryman, that is
Carlos Slim?
Racing for Haas.
Esteban
Gutierrez. Yeah.
So it was. I just see. I called this quite a while ago, and some of my friends said, no way is Sergio going to end up at Ferrari. But Sergio is a talent. He shows well against his famous teammate, who's also highly regarded. And he's got that sponsorship. I don't know. If I had a dollar to bet, I would say Perez to Ferrari is probably a good way to go.
And it's an unceremonious end to Kimi Raikkonen's career if this is how he's going out, because he's clearly racing in a very obedient manner, and you can only think he's doing that because he wants another year's paycheck.
It's hard to say with Kimi, you know, really, as to how desperate he wants to go another season there. I haven't seen him speak loudly like, golly, that's really what's the most important thing for me, is to race one more season at Ferrari.
Were you not listening to him screaming about the radio restrictions at Baku then? He sounded rather passionate for someone of Finnish descent, I have to admit.
To be honest, I think that's just because that directly inconvenienced him. I reckon if you don't ever directly inconvenience Kimi Raikkonen, you're fine. You're absolutely fine. Summers, are you a Perez fan? Because I know you've probably got a more technical look on this than we have. But in to my mind, he's always been a fast guy. Never really seen Hülkenberg race in the same manner as him. And whenever the opportunities have arisen, it's Sergio Perez who's taking them for Force India.
Yeah, that's the clear thing about the situation with the drivers at Force India, for me at least, is the fact that they've supposedly got two very talented drivers that should realistically be on a level playing field with one another. And Perez is the one that has taken them further. Perez has obviously got some good links to Ferrari. And I think, unfortunately, he took a lot of stick when he went to McLaren. And obviously that didn't pan out as he expected it to. Kind of tainted his career, unfortunately.
Okay, so other contenders. We don't rate any of the other contenders. Let's say now this Ferrari seat is definitely open. No shout for Grosjean? Sorry, go on, Matt.
Well, the other contenders would very much be Grosjean and Sainz, I would tend to think. It'd be the two other people they might look at.
Be a big jump for Sainz, wouldn't it, really, to go from the Red Bull Young Driver Program in the Toro Rosso, overlooked for the big boy seat at Red Bull, only to then get a seat at Ferrari. That would be some story.
Yeah, but you just look at his results, and they're not outstanding in the way Perez are, because the Toro Rosso isn't capable of delivering that result. But if you look at the job he has done against Verstappen and the job he has done against Kvyat as well, it really stacks up. And he has the potential to be a solid number two driver for them, and faster than Kimi, I would think.
Go on, Ken.
No, you know, if I may disagree with my my good friend, I there's two things against Sainz going to Ferrari, and one is that Ferrari has this history of choosing well-established older drivers, and Vettel was, he may not be the oldest driver, but he is certainly well established with four world championships. And they've had their pick of drivers. They choose the older, more established drivers. And the other thing is that Sainz, and I agree, Matt, with your assessment of him, he's a brilliant talent, and I think he's got a lot of potential, but he is still making mistakes that would not work well, I think, at the higher level that he's gonna be under at Ferrari, the higher level of pressure there.
Well, he's certainly not gonna make more mistakes than.
Hey, be kind now.
Yeah, I know. Vivian will never talk to me again if I finish that sentence. Yeah, Grosjean, I think, also is an interesting case, because he looked to be the choice, didn't he, early on?
Yeah, great point. And I think Grosjean's still in the running, and he's well established. Not only that, I mean, he's gone through the ringer of the higher pressure, because he had that. I think he's been really well managed. He's done like the psychological high performance sporting stuff or whatnot. And that guy is super impressive. So, you know, at this point, it's hard to say who's going to be the real person, or whether or not they're playing off the two drivers against each other in negotiations. But you would think Grosjean would be probably the lead, perhaps, unless Perez is able to get his sponsorship to get him into that seat.
Okay, so I'm wondering now, if I'm one of these guys in contention for the Ferrari seat, I think there's a possibility, especially while it still exists, of the Mercedes seat still being available. That one seems to be the one where you're going to be given a fighting chance to beat your teammate. I think if you go to Ferrari, you're there to support Vettel. And I think being too good kicking up a stink, complaining about being a number two won't go down well. Whereas at Mercedes, although I do think that Hamilton is their golden boy and their number one, you're going to get a chance to race at Mercedes. So, you know, I think would Mercedes be more likely to bring in a Perez or a Sainz or a Wehrlein to come in and actually and give Hamilton a good test?
Yeah, so I would say definitely yes, and because they're very much in the, and I don't know if this is right or not, but I call it the English philosophy of a team having two drivers that push each other to the maximum, and I think Mercedes tends to run their team that way, and of course, hardcore fans of either of the current Mercedes drivers may disagree, of course, on that. But I think in general that they do work really hard to get that. And I think it's to their benefit. And one of the reasons for their success, although Summer's brilliant article, I'll just foreshadow, really helps explain a lot of their success. But two drivers pushing each other are always going to raise the limit. Whereas if you have one number one driver, a number two driver, you're very vulnerable in that situation to the number one driver having a bad day, coming off of his game. I mean, just look back to what Senna and did when he had Michael Andretti as a teammate, and then Mika Hakkinen steps in and boom, out qualifies Ayrton Senna for the pole in the very first race. I think it really showed how lackadaisical a number one driver can be if they don't have another driver pushing them.
Right. And since I know that Spanners is such a fan of baseball, I will point out that it's one of those interesting statistical flukes that baseball players in the final year of their contract always outperform the middle meat of their contract. And it's because they know that their next set of numbers is going to be very dependent on them looking like they actually still have something left in the bag. And I think the same is true for drivers. And my only question to Spanners would be, like you say, looking for someone to push Hamilton, but correct me if I'm wrong, who's leading the championship right now?
Oh, don't. I've been hearing that on the internet. That's just such, and you know you're goading me. You know you're pushing that buttons.
No. It's an honest philosophical question.
It baffles me in the day and age with all where we have all the information about the technical failures that Hamilton had. Anyone is still there claiming that Rosberg is leading the championship on anything other than the fact that Lewis has had those three pretty severe qualifying dramas. So I'm not even going to entertain that. Yes. Summers, go on, Matt.
No, I was going to say that horrible drama where he drove into the wall all by himself is tragic.
Oh, look, yeah, he had a bad weekend at Baku, definitely. I mean, it's hard to defend that. I mean, I've heard someone say something about, it could have been Summers, actually. Summers, was it you that was saying that they had to change the brake biases forward to attempt to protect the Mercedes brakes in the race? So in qualifying, they shifted the brake bias forward.
Right, it wasn't particularly to do with brake bias. They had an issue with the brake ducts going into pre-practice. So they changed the brake ducts going into qualifying effectively, and that changed the temperatures of the front tyres.
Okay, but it was still clearly he didn't adjust to that situation and he kept making those mistakes. He definitely had a bad weekend in the office. I'll give you that. So, you know, that alone, though, doesn't account for Rosberg's 25-point lead. So come on, let's be sensible. Let's wait for it to shift out. And if Lewis Hamilton is winning the championship, leading the championship in 10 races' time, despite having had those tech failures, I don't know. Just shut up, people. Just shut up.
I reject your reality and substitute my own.
Oh, get out of it. Okay, so honestly, hands up anyone who thinks that Rosberg is leading the championship on merit. There we go. Exactly. Summers, you have no video, but I'm assuming because you've got a brain that your hand is not up.
No. It's not.
Exactly. Right, so let's move on to Jenson Button. Summers, where do you fall in the Jenson Button camp? Are you a fan of Britain's gentleman driver?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Jenson Button, but I think every British person is. He did very well in 2009, and obviously that was very much down to the car. We obviously saw in the first few races, he won the first six, if I remember correctly. So obviously there was a lot to do with the car in that situation. And obviously he's had other chances throughout his career, particularly with McLaren, obviously, in this later section of his career, not whilst with Honda, unfortunately. But definitely he has had those chances. And I think that might have tainted his respect from some people.
Yeah. Right. Now, you may have noticed that Matt Summerfield, Summers F1's audio has taken a distinct phone-like tone. And that's because he has now had to call in from the phone. We also had to cancel the live stream this week. Storms across the UK. Basically, we have to pay the price for any hint of nice weather. We have to have a wonderful downpour. And I think it's my internet that's making it all go wrong. But the Isle of Wight isn't particularly great in the first place. So Summers will be joining us by phone for the rest of the season. For the rest of the episode. But there's talk of button to Williams. And I can't see it from just a pure racing point of view. Is it just nostalgia and money that's making this happen? Or, you know, the money that he can bring?
Okay, so I'll jump in. And I must be candid. I am a secret Williams fanboy, I guess you could call me. And please do. But and I am neutral. I appreciate any team that does good. But I think that he's likely for the very reason that you mentioned, in that Williams has been really smart in the last three seasons, where they're very conscious of their budget, trying to increase what they're bringing in. They're not a top tier team budget wise, and they're trying to get the most bang for their buck. And I think Button hits a lot of those points. He can bring in money. And not only that, I think some people don't appreciate, I think Button is still functioning at a very high level, because his teammate is pretty darn good, and he seems to be able to hold his own still amongst his teammates, whoever they may be. And sure, he may be renowned for complaining on the radio, he still has speed. I think he's a good addition.
Yeah, well, I'll just jump in on top of that and say it's obviously a no-brainer for Williams, because relative to Massa, he's going to save them buckets on tires.
Yeah, but he's going to wear out the batteries on the radio system, because he's going to be talking to the pits all through the race.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
So last on our silly season list is then, is this the end of Fernando Alonso's career? And I'm going to make the case for yes. Because at the end of every Grand Prix, he seems to be pleading to quit, to retire the car. Now, in Canada, we heard him say, please, can we stop now? And they were like, dude, we are like 13th. If three cars drop out, we get a point. And in the end, he finished 11th. And he was kind of like, okay then. And then in Baku, we saw a very similar situation again. Now, I saw odds from Paddy Power that said against both McLaren cars to be classified, was some ridiculous odds, like 3-1. So I instantly, I bet the house on that, because all you have to do for that to win is for one of the McLaren cars to not be classified. And giving us Alonso can't be bothered to even finish, I thought it was a no-brainer. And to be honest, Tony Thunderbeast Barnard, he was the one calling it to me on the text, saying, what are the odds that Alonso, out of the points, now develops some mysterious technical failure? And sure enough, some innocuous thing came, oh yeah, we've got to retire the car. It's not a pull over to the side of a track thing. It's conveniently a fault that allows him to park it in the garage.
But if they don't finish the race, there's a whole host of stuff they can replace penalty free. And if you're Mack Honda at this point, anytime you can replace things for new things, you're definitely going to be one step ahead.
Okay, that's something I hadn't considered, but Button isn't doing that. Button's trying to finish. He's giving it a good old British try.
Yeah, that's because he's looking at getting the axe at the end of the season, and his entirely different motivation. Now, I think Alonso may not quite be done yet, but I think these are just probably warning shots across the bow of Honda, that if they don't turn up with a proper contender next year, he's going to be done. He's going to go try and win the Indy 500. He's going to go try and win Le Mans with his buddy Mark Webber, because you know, there's just really a window in Formula One the way it is now. And beyond that window, you're never going to be competitive unless you have the kind of advantage that, you know, maybe arguably Mercedes has right now.
No, let me just disagree with both of you then. I think Alonso is definitely in for at least one more year at McLaren. And also, I want to correct something that, and maybe Summers, he's our media insider guy. He may be able to back me up on this. But my understanding is that Canada, when he said, hey, guys, please, can I come in now? He was saying, hey, can I come in for tires? And the team knew exactly what he was talking about, and they said no because he was in a position where they figured he could hang on to the set that he had. They had taken a gamble, and he was doing a long run. If he hung on to them, even at the slow pace, he would finish ahead of somebody that was behind him. And because they were just one spot out of the points, if somebody dropped, they would still be in it. So I do think, though, he's got another season. McLaren seems happy with him.
Sam, is he talking rubbish?
No, he's not talking rubbish. That was the actual conversation that came out of McLaren Honda. The fact that it was a tyre pit stop scenario.
Oh, okay.
Alonso was trying to force.
Okay, but given that it sounded exactly like he just couldn't be bothered, what McLaren said afterwards could just be a lie. Sometimes people do that.
Yeah, there is.
It could just be. Oh, that sounded terrible. Let's say it was about tyres.
I didn't think that at all when I saw the press release
from Eric Boullier. All right, guys, let's move it on to Haas. News brought to you by Dad Hub. Some very handsome fathers take a look at relationship and parenting from a dad's view on Dad Hub podcast. Find it at spannersready.com. So who's this guy Leclerc? Some French fella. He's going to get a drive at Haas.
Not just a French fella. He's an official Ferrari Driver Academy member.
And that's good, is it?
Well, we all know the special relationship that Ferrari and Haas have. And we're just seeing yet more evidence of it. In fact, he's going to get to drive at Silverstone, Hungary, Germany, Malaysia, and Abu Dhabi. And guess who he's going to take the place of?
Gutierrez.
Excellent. How did you know that? It's almost like you paid attention.
Because that's the other dude what pays money to be at Haas, I guess. But okay, in my mind, no one's going to convince me that Gutierrez is good. He's there because of some sort of cash deal. But what about this Leclerc fella?
He's won races in GP3. He's young. He's only 18.
Cool.
I don't see this being a race seat next year, necessarily. But I think this is his reward for being the top member at the moment of the Ferrari Academy. As someone that they think. And actually, it's interesting. Do you know who picked him for the Academy?
Why are you always asking me questions? Just tell me things. I could ask myself questions that I don't know.
Because the audience will know and they will think they are smarter than you, thereby making them listen more. But okay,
right.
You made me say that out loud. Jules Bianchi actually handpicked him for the Academy.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Interesting.
That's brilliant. So then who picked Lance Stroll then, Matt?
I think his billionaire father picked him for the Academy.
Do you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of a Mrs. Merton interview of Paul Daniels's wife, Debbie McGee. And the first question she asked him was, so what first attracted you to the millionaire Paul Daniels? Okay, so while we're on Haas, you mentioned in the notes, is that their strategist, Ruth Buscombe? Is that their strategist that didn't want to speak to anyone after Australia?
That would be her.
And you're saying she seems to have disappeared. Why? Where's she gone? I want Ruth. We want Ruth.
Well, we do. We want Ruth for a lot of different reasons. Amongst others, she's a member of Dare to Be Different, Susie Wolf's organization promoting the greater role of women in motorsports.
Yeah.
And more to the point, her pit call in Australia was directly responsible for Grosjean's phenomenal result, keeping him out when all others tried to take advantage of the safety car. And it wound up working up very much in their favor. And she apparently, now this is all reporting based on Will Buxton, I will say, his Racer magazine article about Ferrari,
yeah,
is that she's not been seen on the pit wall since race 3.
Mm-hmm.
And coincidentally, that's when almost all of Haas' performance disappeared. And instead, we saw suddenly in the news, Ayo Komatsu, who is Grosjean's race engineer.
Ooh.
Now, I don't know from nothing, but I did go make a few little inquiries. And the one thing that I can tell you that is a fact is the last time she tweeted anything was April 10th.
Oh, man. So, like, we don't think anything suspicious has happened to her. We're just thinking maybe she's left the team. We're not like...
We're not sure, but Buxton is reporting that there was a raft of resignations from Haas post-Canada. And I cannot confirm that anywhere else but with him. So I'm vaguely concerned about the sudden state of health of that team. What? Because it seems like the people who may have been responsible for their early success are leaving, and I don't know why. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to shuffle over to Summers in a minute, but I must say, yes, I'm a fan of Haas. I wanted them to do well. I want an American team to do well. I want America all in, on board, you know, on F1. You know, plus I might have some cultural American leanings myself. But Will Buxton, I'm not very happy with Will, because somebody linked me to a tweet of his, and I shuffled to it, and I clicked it, only to find out I'm blocked from his account, which made me very upset. I don't know. I was thinking, I don't know what I could have done to upset Will Buxton, because I haven't interacted with him since he ran away from Twitter and then came home hungry.
I couldn't tell you. I have no idea.
Well, I was very sad. That made me upset.
Oh, poor Spanners.
It bruised my ego. Like, Will Buxton's blocked me for some reason. Maybe he blocks a lot of people, though. He seems quite temperamental. Summers,
now
do you...
I'm sad, too.
Oh, now we're all sad. I don't know what we're going to do. Summers, you know a little bit more than us. What's going on at Haas? The picture that Trumpets paints is a team in turmoil. Forget Brexit. It's Haxit.
Haxit?
Haxit.
That doesn't kind of have a good ring to
it. It doesn't at all. No, it's failed. It's a failure.
Honestly, I haven't heard a great deal about it, but we must remember that all of these people are ex-Ferrari engineers. Roof used to work for Ferrari, most definitely, because we've seen in obviously their dress in previous seasons. So I haven't heard much about the mass exodus that Trumpets has just said about, but it wouldn't surprise me that a number of engineers are making a switch back either to Ferrari or obviously thinking about 2017 and the onwards moves that might happen as well besides that.
Because I suppose if you leave an F1 team, you don't get to just shuffle across a couple of booths over to the next team. There's normally a period of gardening leave, isn't there? So I guess if they wanted a seat next season or even 2018, you know, they've got to leave as soon as possible.
Exactly, yeah. You can't just simply say, I've had enough and I'm moving on. Obviously, because of the way that the secrecy within F1 works, the data that can be shared, you can't literally up sticks and move to another team.
Right, you're ringing a bell for me. And this was the Mercedes inquiring about the relationship between Haas and Ferrari prior to Haas officially joining F1. And I'm remembering that one of the changes in the regulations had to do with movement of personnel in particular. I don't recall it exactly the letter. I've not looked it up ahead of time. But you're right, that may actually be very much behind it in that Ferrari may want some of these people back on their team for next year. Ken?
Well, I don't want to interrupt Summers. Wasn't it 6 months or something? Was that the rule or 3 months, something?
Summers?
I think it's 6 months because that's the usual length of gardening leave.
Well, there you go. Well, that would make, you know, perfect sense then for people to be leaving about now. Oh, okay, excellent. Let's move on with the news. Okay, so you're gonna get a glimpse into my awful planning here. Due to Matt's tech problems, we're gonna run the next news item, and then we're gonna do one less of Matt's tech time, just because, you know, the mobile phone and all the rest of it. If everyone is in agreement with that, I'll move on to the Ariba Veni story. Let's hear some nods.
It's all yeah. Good.
All good, buddy. Okay.
Apex.
Ariba Veni says things, and he's angry when he says those things. Matt, what's he on about now?
Well, he was in an interview quoted as saying he thought that the rules were too complicated, not just for the fans, but for the teams as well.
So that.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The excuse this week, it's all just a bit too difficult.
And it's hard always necessarily to take him seriously, not just because he's Italian necessarily, but because he has the full... What?
Tensions are running really high in the EU now. You can't just... That's borderline racist. But anyway, carry on your perfectly legitimate point.
But more because we all know he has the full support of Marchionne in his current position, which always seems to be an utter death knell for whoever's running Ferrari.
You know, now though, his weird boast that they were going to win in Barcelona, doesn't it seem slightly less crazy given the kind of Canada, Baku's a bit of a freak, but given that Canada pace, does it now seem a little bit less nuts that he was thinking they might have done all right in Barcelona? No?
Well, I mean, they did all right the year before. They took advantage of circumstance, but I think that's where they find themselves. And I think when we get to the technical part of the show and discuss Summer's article, it's going to be very obvious why they're where they are and why Mercedes is where it is right now. But what interested me also, and I think this is actually more germane, was that they were discussing testing, and he called for, similar to MotoGP, having the team stick around for the Monday and Tuesday after the Grand Prix, maybe drop a race or two, and do some proper testing at the circuit where they've just raced, not only to give the fans a different experience, but also to be able to better work with the tires. And I thought it was very interesting. I'd be curious if Summers had any comment on that.
Well, it's something that I've actually been saying for a number of years now, that I can't actually understand why the teams don't stay on and test after Grand Prix, because, you know, they've got the circuit there. I understand the constraints in terms of the calendar, because obviously they want to ship parts, et cetera, onwards. So, yeah, you would need to readjust things in terms of the calendar. And then that obviously has an impact on money and Bernie and all of those sort of things. So, you know, it's a bit of a tug of war scenario, but I understand where they're coming from in terms of the testing after a Grand Prix.
What about you, Ken? Would you like to see something like that happen?
So the problem has always been, I mean, that strikes me initially as like, yeah, that's a great idea, right? You know, you don't have to fly people in. You're already there, right? You know, the problem has always been, though, it costs a ton of money to do that testing. Even if you're saving the money of flying people in because they're already on site, You know, rolling these cars on the track, the cost and tires and engineering and all that. So for Ferrari, that would be great. And that's very germane to our upcoming discussion of the great article that Summers had published recently. But for Ferrari can afford the testing, half the grid, that's falls under the line of possible budget buster. So I'm not quite sure. And maybe Summers, you may know a little bit more about that than I do, but I fear that there's a lot of pushback from small teams against that idea.
I think the biggest problem with budgets when we talk about money is the fact that nothing ever really changes. The budgets are always very similar. It's just obviously in terms of economics that, you know, the money goes up and down. But in reality, the actual cost to do these things doesn't change. The biggest change that we've had in the last 10 years would have been the movement towards non-track testing. So teams had to go out and spend money on their wind tunnels and hugely complex CFD. And since then, we've had the restrictions to try and bring those testing elements down, and that costs more money again. So it's always a case of fighting against the cost element of things. And yeah, I can understand where the smaller teams are coming from, but it's sort of to try to press the reset.
I think he's finished.
Yeah.
I don't think that wasn't a dropout. I think he just finished talking. That, yeah, guys, that's just how Birmingham accents work. The Yanks, you've just got to get up to speed quickly.
All right. So fair enough. Fair enough. Good point. I the budgets haven't changed, but I do think Ferrari would benefit the most. They have the biggest darn budget of all. So
that's not changed, Ken. They've always had the biggest budget. So it's just a case of shuffling the deck, effectively. Ferrari have always had the most money, and they've always had the most money from the sport itself and the sponsorship. So I think it's a poor excuse on the smaller team's behalf. I understand that they're struggling for sponsorship and whatnot in this kind of since we've moved to the hybrid era because of the way that the sport is promoted. But I do think that there's a bit of a blame culture coming about.
Well, my heart breaks for our poor brothers at Ferrari. How do they get by? How do they sleep at night? Presumably on a large bed full of money surrounded by beautiful women. Do you want some tech time, boys?
I think we
will. Oh, yes.
Let's play this. Tech time. In association with Amanda Weaver writes. Follow Amanda on Twitter. She writes books that make ideal gifts for your wife that will keep her busy while you do whatever you want. I'm sure certain people on this panel endorse that message. Hope you guys are enjoying the podcast. One note I will just say, it's all fine and well to listen to it from the site or pick it up from wherever you see it posted, but subscribe to it on iTunes if you're an Apple person, or your podcatcher of choice if you're an Android. Keep it ticking over and downloading and being delivered to you early in the morning on a Monday morning. That helps us as well. Gives us a nice consistent download base. Why not, when the live stream is working, when we don't have storms in the UK, you can join the chat room at spannersready.com/livestream. We have a landline number that you can call in on that Summers F1, you're not a sharp, are you? You're a tech analyst. That Summers F1 is calling in on now, which is 0115-888-APEX, and you will be teleported straight into this podcast, and everyone who listens will hear you. Over to you, Matt, for tech time stuff.
Right, so I am actually here. I'm just giving it one of my iconic pauses before we begin.
I live for your pauses.
Yeah, I know you do. Almost as much as you live for F1. So, I'll tell you what, watching Mercedes at Baku was like rolling the clock back to 2014 and the first race. They seemed to be so far ahead of the rest of the field. But it wasn't till after the race was over, and Summers published this article that we've been referencing all episode, that it really began to make sense to me. And in particular, what they'd done with regard to the tires and with their technical partnerships. And so I just wanted to ask, or just have you go over, if you could, Summers, in particular, their use of the camera and the Wi-Fi.
Okay, so basically, there's lots of things that Mercedes, in my opinion, are doing that other teams aren't doing. And it's very strange that, from a technical point of view, that the other teams have allowed Mercedes to do these things and not copied them. It makes zero sense because it is realistically all to do with tyres. And as we've talked on many podcasts before, tyres are such a huge performance differentiator. And especially at a circuit like Baku, where there was literally no data available to them. A lot of the teams were complaining that they hadn't even got references from their simulators because there was no program available for them to run in the simulator. So some of the drivers were actually making themselves comfortable with the track itself via the F1 game on a console, which we can all go out and do. So it just, for me, beggars belief that the other teams haven't kind of caught on to a few of the tricks that Mercedes have been doing in recent years. And as you mentioned, Matt, one of the things is the thermal imaging cameras. So they use, during free practice, they mount in the positions alongside the airbox to sort of neutral airbox camera mounts. And in there, you've got four thermal imaging cameras, one that looks at each tyre. And they're getting a huge amount of data from that in terms of what the tyres are doing throughout a lap, and also depending on which driver it is. And they can use that to reference from. And obviously that data is available to the engineers at the circuit and also back at the factory.
Right. And you had mentioned in your article, and I think this may be where they are just miles ahead, is that they had actually modified these cameras with a Wi-Fi system that allowed them to get the data to the engineers even more quickly.
That's right, yeah. So basically, the cars can only hold so much data when we're talking about telemetry, etc. So all of the lead teams, you'll notice on their front wing, they'll mount a thermal imaging camera. And that thermal imaging camera, obviously all the teams are looking at what's going on in terms of the loading in the tyres. But Mercedes, obviously with their new system, is independent of that because there's so much data. They're looking at a huge spectrum of the tyres, not just the front tyres. And that data needs to be obviously sent back to the pit lane and back to the factory. And so to do that, they've worked with their partner, Qualcomm, to use a Wi-Fi network that when the driver enters the pit lane, those packets of information start to download to the pit wall, rather than it having to roll into the garage, all the bodywork come off, and then they start the download at that point once the car's plugged in.
Yeah, and I think Spanners will be very jealous to hear that you said that it runs around 1,500 megabits per second on its download wirelessly.
Cool. We'd kill for that just now. With all the tech problems we've had today in the storms, we would kill for half of that.
We need to get in touch with Qualcomm ourselves.
Yes, I think so. And so now, but they are literally the only team that is doing this, correct?
That's right, yeah. So they're the only team that have this array of thermal cameras on the car to use during free practice, which they're obviously gathering a huge amount of data to work with. Ferrari, I think, in 2014 tried it for maybe a race or two, but then they just abandoned the project. I'm not sure as to why. I really need to check back through my notes from that season.
Well, if my experience of working in Rome is of any bearing, then it's I reckon it was just lunch or they bumped into someone they knew. I don't know.
Oh man, and you were giving me grief, man.
Yeah, I know, but this was too personal. This was too close to home. That affected my livelihood.
Right. So another thing that really interested me was the story of the Mercedes spoon rear wing.
Yes. So the development curve of the Mercedes for myself is astonishing. It has been since 2014, but this year in particular has been particularly aggressive from them. And I think it's because they realised that there was some threat from Ferrari going into 2016, and they had to up their game slightly. So the WR7 is actually a really aggressive design. There's huge amount of detail work gone into that car, and it's almost as if they're going, well, you know, we were this far ahead and we really need to up our game a little bit to try and stay there. But the spoon rear wing is something that they used last season as well, back at Spa and Monza. But this year they were able to utilise a section of the regulations that were changed at the start of the season that was wrung from when the regulations were changed in 2014.
May I interrupt? You know what's amazing about that spoon wing that you highlighted, Matt, in the article was that they didn't they test that in the first free practice at Canada?
They did, yes.
And so, like, back to the earlier point about Arriva Bene, you know, complaining, oh, the regulations are too complicated, and also we should have, you know, some practice test sessions after the races. What's most impressive about Mercedes, not only the creativity, finding this technical solution with being able to download mass quantities of data during the free practice, but in addition to that, they're testing during the free practice on Friday using that valuable time. It just seems really, really smart on their part.
Yeah, they're streets ahead in terms of being able to bring parts to the car and test it ahead of time. It's not the first time this season that they've took something to another race that with the express intention of it not being run at that race, but in fact being run maybe one or two races down the line. But just quickly going to Arriva Bene's comments, I've heard this before and not from Arriva Bene, and it's in as much as that Formula One is a very complex sport and the rules are written in English, and unfortunately there are teams that don't have English as their mother tongue. Mm. And it's difficult sometimes for that translational element to get things 100% because of the way that the rules are written.
Okay, so what should the rest of the world do? That's right. Everyone just convert to English. It is time. It is time. we gave Esperanto a chance and it didn't kick off apart from Red Dwarf novels. So now it's time to settle into English.
No, I thought it was everybody should convert to Italian. Isn't that what we all need to do?
No, think how tired our hands and arms would be.
We would all be so much stronger.
The interesting thing is I've got some of the original yellow books. That's what the regulations were to start with, back from the 70s. And they were actually written in French and converted to English.
Oh, well,
but more recently, they have now gone solely to English and then translated outwards.
Right. Yeah. And I think the ISC, there's a couple of documents that are dual English French, but otherwise it's all English. Now, the thing about that spoon rear wing, and you compared it to Ferrari and Red Bull, basically Ferrari and Red Bull just ran Monza solutions at Baku, but that's not really appropriate due to the nature of the circuit.
That's right. So obviously Baku is a bit different because it's a street circuit with a huge straight, 2.2 kilometers, and obviously sectors 1 and 3 are high speed, whereas sector 2, which is the bit by the castle, is really quite demanding of downforce. But if you've trimmed your car out to enable you to reach those top speeds, when you get into the twisty section in sector 2, you're going to struggle in terms of downforce. And this is a sort of yo-yo effect that we've talked about before in terms of tyres and keeping them in their thermal operating window as well.
Right. And so the difference being the Monza rear wing just trims downforce, period. But the spoon rear wing makes a transition from drag and downforce more gently.
That's right.
It concentrates the downforce more in the center, but it doesn't remove as much of it. So they get more benefit on the straights, and given their stronger motor, that's better for them because then they can run the tires longer, which is what we actually saw them do.
Yeah, it's a compromise at the end of the day at every circuit, but the spoon wing offers something really in the middle when you come to a circuit like Spa or Baku, as we've just seen. The Monza version last year was actually much slimmer in the centre section. But it, again, they ran it last year at Monza, where everybody ran out with very low trim.
Right. And now I think that makes also a nice contrast to your illustration of the Red Bull front wing, where it literally just more or less took a sawzall to Danny Ricciardo's front wing and just sawed it off so he could do better in qualifying. But then they ran into trouble in the race as a result.
Yeah, and the Toro Rossos did exactly the same. They both literally took a hacksaw to the front wing. And it's something I haven't seen for a very long time, but because you usually see the wing flaps being made specifically for each circuit. But obviously they got to the circuit and realised that they were literally running too much downforce, too much trim at the front end. And that was having an impact on their tyre wear for qualifying, heating the tyres up too quickly. But obviously that came to pay bite them when they went into the race.
Right. And that makes a very nice contrast to Force India, who showed up with their updated front wing. And Perez, you highlighted, had this great comment where he's like, finally, the aero has supplanted basically the usage of tires so they can use the tires as they were intended to be used because they finally had decent aero on the front.
That's right. Obviously, this update in Barcelona, of course, wasn't designed that moves towards the sort of Mercedes lineage where you've got a tunnel towards the outer portion of the wing that helps to control the aero weight around the front end of the car and then has an impact on the performance downstream. So obviously, if you can sort that aero out without having to give up too much mechanical load, which is what they were doing before, then you get yourself back into a sweeter spot in terms of the tyre wear and the degradation, etc. as well.
And that has then been a big motivator behind their improvement of their results in the last couple of races is just getting on top of that aero. But I don't know. I guess for me, the thing that I'm looking at is you're talking about this partnership with Qualcomm. We also know that Petronas has been huge in developing Mercedes performance as well. And it just seems like to me that they are doing an excellent job with their partnerships in terms of getting the most out of their car. I mean, to the point where they've changed the fuel regulations next year and they're not going to be allowed to update the fuels as often.
Yeah, well, the next year you can only use 6 blends of fuel for a season, I believe, off the top of my head.
Okay, that's Summers's phone signal giving up. After his internet gave up, now even the cell networks on the Isle of Wight have voted to leave the rest of the communications of Europe. I mean, of Britain. So, yes, look at the Isle of Wight demographic. I think I want to move on to the race preview. Oh, slick tunes. We're going to Austria, baby. The domicile of the Fat Hippo. The land that I believe was in The Sound of Music. It's far away and covered in snow. What we do know is that that track used to be a lot harder. Now it's basically a box. Do you like this track, Matt? Do you approve of its place, the Red Bull Ring?
It's fun. It's fun. I think I preferred it in its older incarnation, but I think it's fun. And we've certainly seen an interesting race or two there. And you know, it's not going to be good, I think, for the Red Bull team so much, even though it is technically the Red Bull Ring.
Yeah.
I think it will be fascinating to see Force India and Williams at this track.
Yeah, but I mean, if any track is going to suit Williams, this has got to be it, surely. Anytime they try to put downforce on the car, it makes them lose their top line speed without increasing their cornering speed. So here they're pretty free. They don't have to worry about it too much. Am I oversimplifying it? Do they need downforce at all? Can they just take the wings off?
Yeah, sure. What could possibly go wrong with that?
Everything will be fine, like Massa discovered in FP1 in Canada. Everything will be fine. Oh, Lewis, you need to take more care and concentrate. Oh, is that an arm go? Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. It's a funny track. It's one when I've played it on a video game. It's bored me. and it's just, there's not much to it.
You know what? I just wanted to say, Peter Windsor mentioned something very interesting, you know, in regards to, you know, Spanners, your comment there about Williams and also Force India, that they may show strong, but Williams traditionally has done well here. Force India, they're doing quite well with their package, obviously, recently, but Sergio Perez has this strength that Windsor was saying of being really excellent with the throttle and balancing traction coming out of the corner, not losing the rear end and being able to maximize out of there. And I'm thinking, and I don't know, and perhaps Summers could correct me, but that could be a distinct advantage. And we may see Sergio be able to rise once again at the Red Bull Ring.
Yeah, I would suggest that that might. I personally feel that Force India might have actually leaped Williams over the last few races, just in terms of their technical ability. So yeah, I don't see any reason why Perez can't take the fight to the Mercedes and the Ferraris.
Interesting that you say Perez and not Force India. Yeah, and Summers, you've been joining me in my six pound challenge before each race, haven't you? How have you been getting on?
Not particularly great. Daniel Ricciardo is my normal go-to bet. But in the last couple of races, he hasn't really been there.
Your phone line's terrible now as well.
Really? He basically said Ricciardo has not come through for him the last couple of races. So his 6 pounds have gone.
Yeah,
you know, all right. Could have been better spent on a pint somewhere, I think.
Look out for my 6 pound betting challenge on spannersready.com. I release them before a tire has hit the track, and the rules are no money comes to me. Use your own bookie. You bet 6 pounds, you make at least two bets, and you can only top up to your original 6 pounds if you lose the lot. And let's see who's got the most at the end of the season.
Right. Well, if we're talking about Austria, one thing you ought to know is that the track itself has been resurfaced. And several bumps have been removed that, according to other drivers on the track, do make a bit of a difference in terms of overall lap time. In fact, I've seen predicted lap times into the 105s, which would be the all-time record, not just the all-time pole record, but the all-time record period for the track are predicted. So if nothing else, the cars are going to be going very, very, very fast.
But doesn't that mean that there's going to be low tire wear? Therefore, we're looking at a boring one stop again.
Yeah, it's going to depend on P1 and 2 in the start now, isn't it? If we've got two Mercedes off the front together, it's one race. If we've got them subsumed by a Ferrari or perhaps, dare I say, a Force India, well, then we've got a completely different race. But two Mercedes in front equals maybe three laps worth of racing between them for the win, as has been the case for what would you say about a year and a half there, Ken?
Yeah, but just basically on tyre wear alone, if it's a resurfaced track, doesn't that necessarily mean that we're in for a one-stop race, just the mandatory stop, much like we had in Russia?
Barring a safety car or something like that, most likely.
Well, yeah, but the caveat is that it depends upon the tarmac that's used as to how it works with the tires. It could actually remain the same. It depends on how smooth the tarmac is.
Okay, let's test your Austrian knowledge in a quiz. Okay then, so when was the inaugural Austrian Grand Prix? Trumpets?
1983.
Summers?
74.
And Vortex?
I'm going to go with 1960.
1964. Ken, you get 17 points for that. In terms of podiums, who is the most successful driver at the Austrian Grand Prix? Who has had the most podium finishes?
Michael Schumacher.
Did you say Williams?
No, in terms of podiums, who has had the most...
He said Williams too, if that makes you feel better, Summers.
In terms of podiums, who has been the most successful driver at the Austrian GP? Summers!
Alonso.
Matt!
Oh, goodness gracious, you're going to put it all on me, but I would go Schumacher too.
Okay, so the answer is actually David Coulthard. So Alonso has the most similar face to Coulthard. So you get 18 points, putting you in an early lead. Who has the most driver wins in the history of the Austrian Grand Prix? Matt, sorry, Trumpets.
I'll go with Schumacher again because he's German, therefore close to Austria.
Summers, good lodging.
Häkkinen.
Mika Häkkinen, Vortex.
Prost.
Alain Prost with 3 wins. 2 questions to go. That question was actually worth 50 points, Ken, so you're now 49 points in the lead. Who has the most constructors wins in the Austrian Grand Prix? Summers.
Ferrari.
Matt.
Williams.
And Vortex.
McLaren.
McLaren, oh my God. That unfortunately, that question was worth minus 53 points. So going into the last...
What is this, Top Gear?
Going into the last question. What is the circuit length of the new Red Bull Ring? Go, Summers F1.
4.7.
Trumpets.
5.4.
Vortex.
4.6.
The look in your face, you wanted this. You felt robbed by that minus question, didn't you? And it's true, it has worked out like that, because it's 4.3, which makes Summers the winner of this week's quiz, even though that question was only worth half a point. Guys, where can we find you on the internet? Summers, where can people catch up with you apart from motorsport.com? Okay, so I'm going to just cut out the garbled bit of mobile there and say it's SummersF1 on Twitter or www.summersf1.co.uk. I'm hoping that's right. Vortex, people can catch up with you. You're worth following on the races. You're just a funny, amusing, informed guy to follow on Twitter during race days.
Well, that's very kind. I'm on Twitter at VortexMotio. As one word, Vortex Motio.
And that's M-O-T-I-O. So people should follow you there. I'm surprised someone as knowledgeable as you does not put pen to paper and say things about F1 in the form of a blog.
This is true. I keep wanting to dust off my pen and paper, and soon I will. That's what I keep saying.
Okay. I think the problem might be you're too polite. You're constantly... Are you sure you're not Canadian? You're constantly apologizing. Do you mind, guys? I know I'm here as a panelist on a podcast in front of a mic, but do you mind if I say something? And then if you have to disagree with us, like, don't ask permission to disagree.
I apologize for apologizing as much as I have.
That's pathetic. You guys didn't even see the Skype chat where one time he didn't apologize, and I thought, that's better. But he put in the Skype chat, Matt, I was sorry I interrupted there. I'm like, oh my goodness. Just interrupt. Matt Trumpets, where can people find you?
At MattPT55 on the Twitters, please. That is the place to look for me.
Okay, and...
Race and Quality Reports at thejudge13.com.
Yeah, they're good. I'm jealous. I want you over at spannersready.com, but I'm going to need some money. And to get money, I need you guys to come to spannersready.com and read the super interesting stuff that's there. We have Carlo Carluccio, who does some F1 history every day this week. We are going to have Austrian GP history for you to read, and that is going to be a mainstay of the season. Leading up to each race, you're going to have history articles from that race. Now, it was accused of being an angry man yelling at the clouds. Yes, that's right. Carlo Carluccio is an angry man yelling at the clouds, but he paints a beautiful narrative of those Grand Prix. If you want to feel what those Grand Prix were like, read his articles. We've got the Fat Hippo, who is much less delicate. He rants and raves, a very funny guy from Germany. We have Fortis, a very intelligent and passionate man writing on the site. And wouldn't you know it, me, I do the odd thing on their Spanner's log. But look, I'm not going to lose sleep over grammar and punctuation. So if you want great works of Shakespeare, The Library and Matt Trumpets are that away. Join the Facebook group on Missed Apex Podcast on Facebook. There are 124 people on there now. You could be the 125th. Join that group. You post what you want. We're all in there. Until then, wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This has been Missed Apex Podcast. think we all need to move to America for some good internet, despite weather.
Co.eng is what it's going to be pretty soon.
Summers, I felt like if anything else went wrong, we were going to have to move to smoke signals.
Yeah, I know. I've got the carrier pigeon on the way.
Hang on, what do they use in Game of Thrones? Ravens. Send a raven. So it'd be like, so Summers, what do you think of that? Well, hang on, we've just released the raven. Should be a few days, and just leave it on record like that on the live stream. Everyone with their fingers crossed, arms folded.
You know I'm going to use that comment now.
What, in an article?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, that's fine. If you embed a podcast player, it's say what you want. I don't care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's Body Care Breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.